Mari Juanetta's amazing news. It's here. It's time. It's the Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh. Join us for jokes and tokes June 12th at the Artist Tree Studio Lounge in West Hollywood. This event is a 420 friendly comedy show. If you are a Mari Juanetta podcast listener, you have got to come to the Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh. We did two Mari Juanetta sessions last year. In October, we did like a Halloween sesh at Nopali Studios. Literally, Mari Juanetta's listeners from out of state caught flights and flew in just to attend the Mari Juanetta sesh and listening party last October. That was our second sesh ever. The very first ever Mari Juanetta sesh was September of last year. There was a line to get in. Sold out event. Crazy times. You have got to be there. This time around, we are at the Artist Tree Studio Lounge, and we have a lineup of ridiculous comedians, starting with our very, very super special guest, Danielle Perez. We've got Daniel Cabral, who is also going to be our MC and DJ for the night, Vince Caldera, and Louis Lemus, also me. I have seen all of these comics live. They are hilarious. Danielle is on TV. Vince has his own special that he's recording coming out soon. Daniel is a wedding DJ. And Louis has the best mustache in stand-up comedy. So you've got to be there to see it all June 12th. The Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh at the Artist Tree Studio Lounge is sponsored by Humo, Mexican-American-owned, Salinas-based Humo. You know that this is my favorite flower brand. This is the only flower brand that I am smoking on the podcast and shouting out and really fucking giving big ups and big props to. So we want to thank Humo for sponsoring the Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh and making this event possible. So make sure you come through. You can get your tickets to the Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh on Eventbrite. Visit my Instagram and hit the link in my bio at @Mala_Munoz. You can also hit the link in the show notes for this episode. The Mari Juanetta Summer Sesh, June 12th at the Artist Tree Studio Lounge, sponsored by Humo, is the first Mari Juanetta Sesh of 2022, and you don't want to miss it.
She's a depressed 20-something with a college degree, who copes with life by smoking too much weed. Dodgy and cochinos as she rolls down the street.
Oye, mami, I want to be your dog.
Aim higher, pendejo.
She's la Mari Juanetta, as seen on IG.
That's me.
Mari, 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 Mari Juanetta.
Calling all Mari Juanettas, hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 19 of, you guessed it, Mari Juanetta, a podcast for potheads, created, hosted, and written by me, Mala Munoz. A reminder that you can leave me a voice message that just might make it into a future episode of Mari Juanetta, a podcast for potheads, by heading to locatoraradio.com, leave me a voice message on the speak pipe. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, Besitos, while you're at it. That's locatoraradio.com. Check out the show notes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave me a review if I make you laugh, if I make you cry, if I make you cough. Leave me a review or a voice message. Also remember, you can subscribe to the Mari Juanetta tier on the Locatora Productions Patreon. Use our affiliate code Mari Juanetta P4P for a discount off your next glass purchase at latinaownedmota-glass.com. Today's episode of Mari Juanetta, a podcast for potheads, is a very special drop with an exclusive interview between Susie Plasencia, aka Susie Greens, and Felicia Carbajal, executive director of the Social Impact Center. Felicia Carbajal is an award-winning community organizer, social entrepreneur, abolitionist, and manifester with over two decades of movement-building experience within intersectional communities. I want to thank Susie Greens for sharing sharing this interview with the Marihuaneta podcast and all of my Marihuanetas at home. There's a lot of you. You might remember Susie from the Marihuaneta season 2 premiere episode, the 420 special with Susie Greens. Well, this is a sort of follow-up to my interview with Susie. Susie sits down with Felicia to talk about her over 2 decades of work in the cannabis space, before it was cool and before it was legal. So we want to thank our sponsor, Umo, for sponsoring today's episode, sponsoring this interview, as well as our upcoming June 12th Marihuaneta Summer Sesh at the Artistry West Hollywood. You all are going to love this conversation between Susie and Felicia, two titans in the cannabis industry. I know I did. I loved listening. I learned a ton about where cannabis was and how far we've come. If you're a Latina interested in getting involved in legal cannabis, you have got to listen to this entire episode. You must tune in to the entire conversation between Susie and Felicia. But before we get to that incredible interview, we do have a word from our sponsor, Umo. So, Marihuanetas, if you have been listening to Marihuaneta, a podcast for potheads, since season 1, episode 1, then you know that I like to light up when I smoke. I mean, smoke up when I light. I mean, get lit when I record. And these days, I've been smoking flower from Mexican-American-owned, Salinas-based cannabis brand, Umo. This is a brand new cannabis brand. They just launched, and I really do have to give it up to them. The weed is not only delicious, it also hits in all the right ways. Umo also has a true mission of accessibility, quality, diversity, and uplift. You know that this podcast, Marihuanera, is all about celebrating la vida marihuanera, la marihuanidad, as I like to call it, and normalizing our relationship to flower. The folks behind Umo feel the exact same way that we do. And let me just say, as a, you know, an ever more conscious cannabis consumer, I do really try to support cannabis brands that are POC owned and led and have a mission. There aren't that many, but Umo is churning out. Don't just take it from me. Tune into episode 16 of Marihuaneta with Umo brand partner and Mota Glass co-founder Susie Greens. Susie dishes about all the innovative eco-friendly grow techniques that the Possible Project utilizes to cultivate Umo flower. If you want to light up and enjoy some Umo but don't know where to get it, walk into your local dispensary and ask them to carry Umo today. Trust me, it works. They'll do it. Dispensaries follow the lead of the customer, the client, the patient. And Umo wants you to feel empowered as potheads to ask dispensaries where you shop to carry the brands that most speak to your stoner soul. So remember, where there's fuego, there's Umo.
All around badass, let's welcome to the Greens, Felicia Carvajal.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. Here we have stuff to session. We have Mota Glass fully packed. And we also have these two joints by this awesome brand, actually dispensary that just opened up, Josephine and Billy's here in LA. So proud of them. So we got some of their joints right here named after Josephine Baker and Billie Holiday, which two badass women really, really embodying the fight against injustice and rejecting the mainstream. These are such good joints. I remember you trying them before and really loving them. So if you'd like to sesh, go ahead. You know that I'm going to. Cheers. We love these joints. I went to their grand opening a couple of weeks ago. No, was it months ago? And so good. Everything, their whole vibe is just all speakeasy themed. And it's just really great. The joints are actually collab with Balt Family Farms. And just really great high quality stuff. Cheers. Nice. So, really excited you got to join us. You're coming off of Mexico trip, which I'm so excited to hear about. But first things first, what have you been up to, and how do you enjoy cannabis in your everyday life?
So, I like a little bit of everything. So, it's hard to pinpoint. Like, in the morning, I start off my morning with CBD. I've been taking CBD for over a decade in lieu of Valium and Xanax. And then, I mean, I'm a good old fashioned joint girl. I'll probably hit that bong too at some point with you. Such beautiful bongs. It's like, how could you not want to hit a bong from that? But I always love that first rip from a joint. Especially if it's good, like not all joints are made the same, but
no, they are not.
These joints, you actually can taste flavor.
Yes. Let's talk about bad joints really quickly. One time I was at an event and I had, so for those who may not know, I run a social media marketing agency. We work with brands and I had hit up this brand. We're doing an event, right? They donate a ton of joints and I don't know who packed them or what it was packed with. But we're
trim. They're trash. It was packed.
So we're
trash.
Passing them out to these influencers and, you know, doing their thing. They're taking out their camera. They're about to light it. That thing explodes on them because it's so badly packed that they lit it too much and it just did this puff. And then it was just disgusting. You could tell her face. Embarrassment for both the brand, us, all around. I don't understand.
People being that cheap.
I don't get it. They want to be cheap, but then it's going to be expensive in the long run, which I don't understand.
Well, I think, I don't know what to think because I like to take flour like that and grind it up myself. I'm a pretty good roller and roll it myself. I like to feel the cannabis in my fingers. I like to be able to know that, hey, I rolled that. I broke it from actual weed, not trim, not stems.
Or like half of it will be Keith and you're like, well, how am I even going to smoke this? They're out here. But you know, cannabis has been legal for a handful of years here in LA. But you're talking to someone here who has been in it for almost 2 decades, which I can't even begin to understand what it was like back then, but also being able to see legalization kind of develop and take place as well. Can you let us know how you got your start in cannabis?
Sure. I'm going to date myself a little bit because it's actually been well over 2 decades. So about 26 years ago, I listened to The Call, meaning it was the middle of the 90s. We were still experiencing the HIV AIDS crisis. I had friends who had HIV and AIDS who said that they needed this. And I didn't really believe them. But when somebody came to my apartment in Berkeley and threw a sack of weed down on the table and said, hey, you're headed to the city. Do you mind taking this? It's for Kevin. Kevin happened to be a friend of mine who was queer. I didn't know that they were HIV positive. So immediately I was like, you know, tugging at the heartstrings in terms of, well, you know, what? My Kevin has AIDS? My Kevin has HIV? And just taking that all in. And then, I mean, that same person, the next sentence after they're out of their mouths was, well, Felicia, you look white enough, so you don't have to worry. Which I knew what that meant because I knew what looking white enough in Oakland and the Bay Area during that time meant. It meant it gave me a pass to not be harassed by law enforcement. So picked up the bag, put it in my little JanSport backpack, got on the BART and headed into the city. And the rest is just a lot of fun and a lot of history in terms of meeting amazing, eclectic, eccentric people. Recently, Dr. Alan Frankel passed last month. Dr. Frankel passed. Mm-hmm. I got to revisit working in the cannabis space in 2010 with him. It's been a lot. It's been interesting, to say the least, to see the transitions from the long drives down the 5 back to Los Angeles or in different areas that I went to make sure people had access, to today, to seeing a regulated market that continues to fail our communities and continues to allocate resources foolishly, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I've been here for a long time. I still love Mary. She's still my girl. So I'm just grateful for being able to do so many intersectional things, from the LGBTQ movement to some of the expungement related work that I've been doing lately, to advocating for parents to have access and teaching them how to fight for themselves, to seeing where the plant is today.
Yes, I absolutely love that your story of entering cannabis comes from authentically wanting to help people versus many of those who are entering the cannabis industry now post-legalization, where it's funds first, basically.
Oh, people would laugh at me if they knew that, like, okay, when I did get to San Francisco and I did give them their sack of weed, they put money on the table. That right. money stood on the table until about 5 minutes before I walked out the door because I had no idea that the money was for me. I had no clue. I literally thought, I'm doing a favor for a friend. Like, and I'm going to go and bitch slap him, or I'm just going to be so mad because, like, dude, we just hung out. Why didn't you tell me you had HIV? Why didn't you, like, just let me love on you and just be there for you? Like, I had to find out this type right. of way. But, I mean, I always tell people, like, dude, the money was sitting there, and, like, they're like, Felicia, that's for you. And I was like, for what?
Right. Because you were doing something that was so important to you and you were wanting to do.
What would you do for your friends?
Yeah.
Or somebody who you love like a brother, what would you do?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know. The idea of getting paid for that is something where almost you want to reject it because you're like, no, this is something.
Well, no, I picked up the money.
Yeah. Initially, I didn't.
After they had to tell me, and then I had to realize, well, shit, how many laws did I just break? Mm-hmm. Like, what would that have looked like? And being comfortable with picking it up to still, like, you know, to tell people, like, hey, I've driven down these freeways with boxes
right.
of weed. A box is 100 pounds. And I've done it with no fear in my heart because of what that person told me. Hey, Felicia, you look white enough. But knowing at the end there was going to be somebody who needed it for whatever reason. And typically back then, like what we see now is a lot of the farmers who've existed for generations would give you a little bit of extra of whether it was shade, a little bit of weed so that you can give it away to people who were sick.
Right.
And for me, it was just like, okay, I'm going to go buy 100 or 200 pounds, but they're going to probably give me a couple of pounds that I'll be able to just give out uh-huh. to people and be able to share. So for me, it was always like, I knew that I had so many sick friends and most of them, you know, they were sick.
Right.
They were kicked out of their homes. They oftentimes did sex work. Like, you know, nobody else was going to be there for them. So if I could take other people's money, go buy 100 pounds, be able to come back with 105 pounds and be able to send rations for my friends, it was worth it for me.
Right, right. Wow, that's an amazing story. But when you were doing this, were you telling your family about what you were doing? How was that conversation?
My family's very traditional Latino. They had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I would check in every now and again. I would randomly stop in. My dad lived in a different state. So, you know, I would, hey, Dad, I'm in town. Can I stop in? And, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm just here taking care of some business and keeping it really light mm-hmm. and making sure that we weren't digging deep into those types of conversations.
Right.
And like a lot of us who have certain lived experience, like to say that, like, hey, we didn't talk about that. My Theo was killed execution style by the cartel. Like, those are the types of things that a lot of our community members associate with this plant. So I wasn't going to tell them that I was risking my life or risking my freedom to do something because they would have thought I was crazy. Like, oh, you're doing it for the money. Well, I'm doing it. Yes. Cause you know, everybody's got to make a living, but I'm also doing this because it affords me an opportunity to be able to help so many people at the same time. They wouldn't have heard any of that. So those conversations were like, they knew I was on business. I didn't make up what the business was. I just kept it like, I'm here for work. Don't ask me any more questions. Let's keep it moving.
So was there a moment where you thought like, no, I have to be upfront about it? Or how did it come out when they actually found out?
I was arrested and incarcerated when they found out.
Oh, so get out of the bag.
Yeah, like, okay. Oh, well, I'm going to be going to prison for the next 6-7 years, and oh, by the way, so it wasn't anything that we emphasized on. It wasn't a big conversation. I mean, now it is. Now, you know, my dad messaged me and he's like, Mija, I've got this, my shoulder's hurting me, like I remember that balm that you had, and, you know, being able to like make a telephone call and have somebody ship out just a CBD yeah. balm to him to help. I mean, with my mom it's the same thing. Like, and, you know, my mom was way more conservative than my dad. But, I mean, she lives in the little casita in the back of on my property. So now, you know, when she asks for things, she sees us smoking. I mean, yeah. I still am like, oh, I'm going to stop. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not going to feel shame. Like, lady, you grew up with watching other people consume it at the end of a hard day. You grew up with having parents, siblings who worked on farms, who were farm workers. And at the end of the day, after busting their ass so that America could eat, there should be no shame with people consuming. I mean, I don't do half of the hard labor that any of my family members have done, but still, like, recognizing, like, well, they weren't ashamed of having to smoke to relax after working, you know, 10 hours, 12 hours in the fields and still being able to just consume a little bit to have a good night's rest or to help with whatever aches and pains. So I walk in, you know, when my mom comes into our backyard and she sees me, you know, sometimes I'll still like, okay, I really don't want you to see me smoking. And sometimes I'm all like, you know what? I'm hurting. Like, this is for my ancestors. This is for the people who
I love that.
This is for the people
we smoke for our ancestors.
Well,
I love that.
To be able to do it without shame,
yes.
Because there was so much shame associated with this, like to acknowledge that, like, hey, my grandfather smoked cigarettes, smoked cannabis since he was pre-adolescent.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, like he grew up on his own. Like he left his home before he was even a teenager to go work and to provide. And, you know, like whatever he was doing, like I'm not here to judge any of that.
Right,
and I would hope that like that's afforded my family an opportunity. I mean, now my family's like, oh, well, you know, can you educate, can you have conversations? Can you talk to, you know, your great uncle? Can you explain to him what's going on? Because the doctors want him to do this, that, or the other. So now it's just like, you know, it's like, it's great to see our community embrace something that has ravaged and hurt so many of our households. And not just by incarceration. Like, I always tell people, like, hey, you know, in the United States, you know, most people were incarcerated. A lot of people also died. But still today, just on this imaginary line that exists that says here's the difference between this country and that country, and just seeing the devastation that still exists, or, you know, the fear that's associated with it. I mean, this last time I went to Mexico was so great because they're all like, oh, Felicia's loca. She brought in her own stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe a little bit. I'm all like, I'm going to stop doing that now that I know that I've got all the plugs that I need.
Yeah, LAX is getting a little iffy about that kind of stuff. They're like banning vapes of any kind. They're saying that if you carry anything, at the sheriffs are going to be there. I mean, it's scary, but I still flew with vapes too. But nothing happened. But they're trying to really crack down. I saw something on LA Taco. Shout out to LA Taco recently that they posted this whole thing of like ban things.
You're gonna have to share that with me because I was still operating off of last year's exciting news that they're lazy, so they're gonna turn a blind eye.
I mean, they were very blind with me, and then they were like esculcando my shit like pretty hard, and I was kind of like, I was getting ready to be like, oh, you know, it's an old, you know, just throw it away. And then they fully just didn't even, oh, and then we're crossing, and then they ended up flagging us. Like, oh, something up with your suitcase. And I'm like, oh, they found, like, my Mota glass beaker. They found my 5 vapes. They found my 3. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to say? And then, no, it turned out to be Bobby's fungus, the scream. It was, like, too big. And I was like, yes, fungus. Not my weed.
I mean, I feel like I'm blessed by the weed fairies and the, what is it? The Niño Santo fairies too,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That for whatever reason.
Yeah, shout out to the Niño Santo. He watches me too.
Like, I'm like, so I felt great. I mean, granted, now that I know that folks are really trying to create the regulated market, you
right.
know, sitting at a friend's house and like, oh, I'm just going to bring out 10 pounds and let me show you all of the different types. Oh, do you dab? Oh, do you? And just thinking, well, oh, okay.
I should love that. I mean, where was that back in the day? My first dab was at a crazy table with like all this like situation going on. And I remember them asking me, do you want to take a dab? And I had smoked so much that I was like, yeah, I'll take a dab. I took a dab and that thing smacked me so hard that I had to excuse myself because I didn't want anyone to think that I was like too high. And I was like, I'm just going to use the restroom. I went and I coughed up a lung, and then I had coughed up so much that I, you know, ended up kind of throwing up a little bit. And then I kind of wiped myself up, wiped my eyes because I had been tearing up. And then I went back in that room and said, I gotta go, guys. And then I
let me take another one.
No, I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of these folks that had showed me what a dab was. And I was at a dispensary because my first foray into cannabis, I was a bud tender when I was like, before I was 20 years old. And that's when it was. I was coming in real quick because of something. And they were going to take a dab. And I was like, I'll fucking take a dab. I ain't no bitch. And then, whoa, I had to... Go to bed, guys. See ya. And then I went home and I slept for like 17 hours. And then the next day I was like, oh man, dabs are next level. And it took a couple years for dabs to really become what it is now. I mean, now there's just a subculture of dabbers and there's a ritual associated with the cleanliness of it. And it's interesting.
That and the cost effectiveness of it. Like all of the rational things. Like, I mean,
it's next level. No.
I mean, I remember in 2016, we were afforded an opportunity to march in LA Pride. It was the first time since 1996 that anybody from the cannabis space had marched in Pride. And of course, like we had amazing people like Liv from Kush Queens, Mama Saline, or my friend Saline,
yes.
Some dear friends were all there, and everybody was dabbing. Like, it was the safest and easiest thing to do.
Because it doesn't stink the same way as, you know, it's not as loud as our friend Mary over here. And it's just efficient. It does tend to be a little, I have some problems with devices. Sometimes they'll get dirty and then it's like, But, you know, shout out to dabbing. It's come a long way and I'm excited to see where it's headed.
And I was, I'm telling you, when I saw big jars with beautiful diamonds in Mexico, I was just like, okay, you guys are ready for them to create a regulated market and to be able to give this type of access to people. It was.
I love how you always bring me back to not profits, but access to people, because that's a real one, guys. Like, it's never about like where the next level in terms of financial growth. It's about access to the people that need it at the end of the day. And that's, I think, the difference between a lot of OG cannabis industry people and cannabis, you know, people nowadays that I've seen. Because I've met them both. And some of them, you know, really are focused about who's it for and what's the overall goal here. What is it for? And some are just really focused and looking at it as a business, which I don't think is bad. But I think that you got to remember what it's about at the ground floor, at the foundational level.
Well, I mean, right now, those businesses and entrepreneurs that you're talking about, they haven't really been assessed for their corporate social responsibility elements. So the minute that happens, everybody's going to probably be singing a different tune because they're going to be forced to. It's so unfortunate, though, that when we're talking about, you know, whether we're talking about psychedelics, whether we're talking about cannabis, that this is all a part of counterculture. So this was cool. Like, some of us were doing this before other people knew that they even could, or that they knew that this was cool. So like when you come from spaces like that and you usually have so many different intersectional communities, people, different experiences, for me, it's always important to just remember that, like, dude, you would be nothing. You would have nothing if those people didn't afford you that opportunity to put that change in your pocket. So, you know, maybe this is just old school, but like a lot of folks used to give somebody a joint to try it, to see, because they knew the next time it wasn't going to be for free, but they respected somebody by that gesture the first time.
Right.
And so when we have people who aren't thinking about like community in that way, like, you're not really going to survive.
No, not at all. And you see a lot of brands flooding the market right now because they want to fill up the shelves and dispensary shelves. But what are you here for at the end of the day? What's your corporate social responsibility mission? But also, like...
Well, the Brads and Chads were never cool, and they're still not going to be cool.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you have a joint that's yours, or you grow weed, or you bought somebody else to grow you weed, or
celebrity on brands.
Like, right? Like, if you're still not cool, you're never gonna be cool.
And being coolness in cannabis, it's connectedness to community. At the end of the day, it's people knowing you, but knowing you not through the press, like knowing you from the ground floor, like knowing what you're about, knowing what you're not about. And you know, grateful for the press that has come from Mota, from my and from myself, but the people who fuck with me, fuck with me. And as, you know, we're growing, start getting some haters, which happens, really new
you're
to
not,
that.
You're not doing that. You're not doing shit right unless you have haters. I got a lot of haters and I'm okay with it. Hi!
Talk to
hi,
you.
Hi, haters! Hi!
Honestly, haters is something I'm still coming to terms with, because I'm like you in the sense that I came in here with a mission that's not financially motivated. So when I think of, when I see the fact that there are people spending their energy and effort to do me wrong, I'm like, don't you know that all this is for you? You know, and it kind of upsets me in a different level, because I think about that, my mission, and I'm like, no, my mission is to include you. And this is what you're doing to the this. But I think when I snapped out of it is when I realized that that was me putting effort to that. And my effort needs to go to my mission. And so at the end of the day, haters, if you give them the time, they will suck the time and talent that you have over for your dreams and goals and an overall mission. And that's when I snapped out of it, guys. And I'm still dealing with how to come to terms with haters, because as Mota grows, the haterade is just pouring. And it's like, I'm having terms with it. How have you dealt with it over the past 26 years?
I mean, I have friends outside of weed. So like to say that, like, oh, as a member of many communities, I don't rely and just have friends that smoke. I have friends who don't smoke weed and I don't care. I don't try to push it on them. Like, they don't judge me if I smell glorious and I'm coming into spaces that maybe they can actually smell me. Like,
right.
But I think, you know, I also don't care, like, to say that, oh, you know, like, oh, I'm so sorry. I grew up with a lot of love in my home. My mom always told me that I was special. And guess what? I believe her. So I don't really care what you think of me. I don't care, oh, whatever you're going to say, that fat bitch, that white passing bitch, whatever you're going to call me, it doesn't really bother me, because I'm here and I'm tunnel vision and I'm super focused on what our community as a whole needs and how we preserve some of the foundational values that this community has oftentimes, unfortunately, forgot about.
Hell yeah. So a strong sense of self and tunnel vision. Stay focused on your goals. And that's how I think we can overcome the haters. And that's wonderful advice. Thank you so much. On the same advice tip, Latinas are out here in the cannabis industry, from bud tenders to people with heads of organizations, owners, educators, the list goes on. What advice do you have to give them for those that are entering the cannabis space and maybe struggling with community and just kind of navigating the industry?
Find your people. Find people that you share values with. Some of them aren't going to be your people, and forgive yourself when you start associating with people who are assholes. Like, forgive yourself. Like, it's okay. Recognize that, especially those of us who come from specific lived experience with being who we are. So being Latinos, Latinx, Latinas, like all of these, wherever you fall there, like just recognize that, like, dude, most of us come, I always joke with people. So I'll start off with this. I have 72 first cousins, like I legit have 72 first cousins. And you know, I treat people like, oh, you're like my cousin. Like, I don't know you that well. I don't know some of my cousins that well, but I'm going to love you until you fuck me. So I think, you know, we as women in the industry, we as queer people, wherever we fall, we just have to remember, like, find your people, find people who you can trust, check in with yourself, your mental health as often as possible. Because there's lots of bullshit ass games that are being played that target us and put us in stereotypes and boxes, which obviously, like, most of us are breaking all of the molds. And if the majority of society recognized that, like, dude, we're the largest growing populace in America.
Like, we really are.
No.
And we have money. Like, we do. We're out here buying so much, specifically Latinas, because we're out here and we're finally reaching a new area with, you know, we still have that large pay gap. We're still not making as much as white men. But at the same time, we are climbing that ladder. And
we know how to save, and we have those traditional values that have afforded us an opportunity to be able to have disposable incomes that we traditionally haven't had.
Yes.
And we're in workplaces and in jobs that are the same as our male counterparts.
Yes.
So whether or not we're getting all of that money, we still are, we know how to turn 50 cents into a dollar every single time. Yes. So I think some of my biggest advice for women, especially Latina women, is to find your community, find your friends who you can trust in cannabis, and just do it. Every time they tell you no, or they being Chad or Brad or whoever you have to ask, think outside of the box. Like, think about what your grandmother would have done to make her dream a reality. Think about what your great-grandmother did to make her dream a reality for you to even exist. And just channel that as much as possible to recognize, well, shit, like, damn, our people, our indigenous ancestors are amazing, and they could do anything. They built amazing things when we go back to ancestral lands, and we're all like, dude, how did they do this? Like, it wasn't just the men doing it. So we have to just draw upon that and just recognize that, like, this is our generation's industrial revolution. We haven't seen an industrial revolution for over 100 years. This is our generation's industrial revolution. And we have a unique opportunity not to just acquire resources and do it in extractive ways, but figure out true ways to build community based on values that are centered around community, which we haven't seen in a long time, but they're inherent to how we behave as community. I mean, I can't speak for every single Latina, everybody who identifies as Latinx, but I know that from most of my circle and my people, that we really are centered around how do we uplift our siblings.
Right.
And I think that makes us unique because, you know, we don't have to have that crab in a barrel mentality where we've got to, oh no, I can't let you. No, no, no. Come on, sis. Come on, Edmana. Like, get up there. Like, get your flowers. Right. Take those props. Right. Make them clap for you. Like, so I just, that's my biggest, I mean, that's what I've done. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, you don't
find
like
your
me?
People.
Oh, I don't really care.
Yeah, you're not my people me. Then. Then you're not my people.
Bye.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think finding community has been such an important part of my career journey in cannabis. And it's actually how we even got connected to begin with. So for those of you guys who know me, Susie Green, Susie Placencia, I was involved in a pretty high profile boycott of a cannabis company that landed on the front page of the LA Times. But when we were in the thick of it, it was scary because it's not something that we had seen be done in this way, very social media centric. And, you know, and it was scary because I didn't know what was coming. I really didn't know because there was a lot of support, a lot of Latino people who were like, fuck yeah. But there were a lot of confused people who were like, what's going on? And then there were people who were against it. And, oh, they called us what do they call it? Culture, something or other. I'm blanking on the thing, but they were just calling us basically, just Coloraders. Just basically, you guys are just upset that you guys don't have a company. So you're calling out a company. Like, no, this was a white owned brand that pretended to be Latino owned and made up stories of three Chicana women when they did not exist, when there are real Latina women doing it. And they had to go make up three. So anyway, boycott happened. It's getting scary. And the CEO of the company starts threatening me. And this is a white, this is a Brad Chad type of dude, millionaire. And he's coming out here threatening me. And I'm like kind of shaking my boots a little. Like, nobody knows because I was, you know, my front facing, like, fuck yeah, we're going to do this. But the first time doing it, I'm not a boycott. This isn't what I do professionally. But so when he started with the threats, I'm like, wait, well, you know, I know that sometimes they're empty, but sometimes people with money can just do things, you know, even if it's like, even if it doesn't hold any weight, it's still something that could, as someone who's not in that level, you know, cause me real problems. So I was venting to a good friend of mine. She goes, you need to hit up my girl Felicia Carwell. She knows about these scummy white men just like that, and she'll be able to guide you and give you that kind of guidance that I think you're looking for right now. And that's how I remember hitting you up, because I wanted just kind of something, feeling like someone who had did something similar. And that's when you had shared with me what happened at South by Southwest. So I would love for you to share with us on how that went down. It was another type of cannabis boycott, not quite on social media, but equally as impactful because it was in real life. You guys had signs and everything.
Yeah, we had pretty good press coverage surrounding it as well. But we were going to be speaking at South by Southwest on a panel surrounding discussions of healing the harms from the war on drugs, and last minute entry was John Boehner and his other business partner, Kevin, whatever. And I didn't want to go. I told everybody, I was like, you guys, you know what? As somebody who worked during the marriage equality movement, who's formerly incarcerated, who's a brown person, like, I don't want to share any space with the likes of somebody like him, especially knowing that he's profiting off of something that he never took a stance and actually hurt our community severely. And so, you know, I brought it up to the rest of the folks that were on the panel. They were like, no, Felicia, you have to go. What do you want to do? Mm. And then, so that's where it started. I was like, well, I think we need to, you know, do the different things that we did in terms of the signs and the banners that we had overpasses so that people can draw attention to the fact that we had some simple demands, that we really wanted to see automatic expungement. We really wanted to see investment in our communities, not reinvestment either. I know people like to say, oh, you want community reinvestment. I'm like, fuck you. You've never invested in our communities in the first place. I was like, and that term is a 70s banking term. That's bullshit that bankers will tell you that our communities were never invested in any kind of real palatable way. And we also wanted him to acknowledge his role in the harms. So, I mean, had a brief conversation at a Starbucks with the partner who already kind of knew and saw that we were coming. And because of all of those things, I knew that they knew that something was going to happen. Mm. But, you know, during South by Southwest or during the panel discussion that they had, I was sitting there and I was just listening. I was just like, my wife was next. Another friend was next to me. I mean, our whole group was sitting in a row, and I was just like, I'm starting to get sick to my stomach. Yeah. And I just had to ask him, because, you know, inquiring minds wanted to know. I wanted to know, like, how are we supposed to believe somebody who's voted for policies that are racist, homophobic, and misogynistic? And I just shouted it out. And then we, you know, I had some old white lady behind me telling me, mind your manners. I always remember her too. I'm like, bitch, I am reminding my manners. Every time that I use my voice to stand up to this racism, the heteronormative patriarchy bullshit that's spewing out of these Chads and Brads mouths, whether it's spewing or their actions, I'm winning. I'm winning. I'm doing this for my grandmother who couldn't do it, my great grandmother who was afraid to do it. Like, I'm their wildest dreams. I'm going to say whatever comes to my mind. Like, I'm going to, you know, I tell people sometimes I walk into rooms like I'm some old white dude too. Like, what am I taking? What am I getting? And that's kind of how South by South was just like, I was so offended that all of these weed people, I can't say that I even respect, but all of these weed people were okay with the idea that this scoundrel, mm-hmm, could profit.
Because money. Yeah.
Because, I mean, but they were okay with it. Then I just started thinking, like, oh my gosh, so many people in weed are sellouts. And I know they don't like it when I say that. I'm like, dude, when did you become a sellout? And I'm not a sellout. This is just blah, blah, blah. This is business. I'm like, oh, you're a sellout, but it's okay. You can come to grips with it on your own time.
Oh, man.
So that was it. I was just propelled by the idea that in what fair world, you know, in what just world does this scoundrel get to come in and just
Ride the wave, yeah. Right? And it's such an inspiration for definitely what we went through, but a lot of other women who I think are now in, you know, post all the protests as well. But I think there's an energy now where people are wanting to speak out, but I think that some maybe don't know how to. So I think that talking about it and sharing about how we did things can hopefully inspire other people to do it the right way, which is responsibly, right? Which is doing the work first, knowing what you're going to say and why, what you stand for, and accepting the consequences, both bad and good, which is press and recognition, right? But if this is, I'm talking to the Greens community here, if there's anything that you want to do in terms of activism or advocacy, just do the work first. Make sure that you are the right person for it. And if you're not, support other voices as well. And make sure that what you're doing is mission-based and it's going for the right cause, right? Because I think that activism, some people just want to make noise. And that is great, but it should go towards like a deeper meaning that...
Well, if you're the person who's just making the noise, you should be friends with the people who are organizing the actual work and the extra actions as well, because it's going to take everybody to do whatever their skill is. Because some people, their only skill is to like, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to press the like button. I'm going to reshare it. There's nothing wrong with you. Like, we need you to do those things. But we also need people who are willing to put in the hours.
Yes.
Like, I've dedicated most of my adult life to forms of activism. You know, you don't get rich. I mean, I'm super blessed. I always tell people I'm super fortunate. I have doors that open for me that I never even dreamed that would be open. And I also have an amazing supportive wife who works an amazing corporate job and will take it from the man so that I don't have to, and affords me an opportunity to be able to be this vocal, because I think, you know, in our partnership, we've recognized that, like, if I can't speak my truth, I would rather be dead than not being able to actually do something and create change. And so she's really been the biggest, you know, to tell people to go into meetings and, like, oh, well, you know, if you don't do it, you don't get funding. I'm like, oh, well, guess what? My agreement, my contract,
right,
my marriage certificate with my wife already affords me a 6-figure salary. So I'm good. Like, it's okay. Like,
they want you to bend so much, though, you know, and it's tough because the industry is just a lot of money is pouring in. But the ones that are getting big are maybe not, don't have the right mission in mind. So I think it's honestly up to consumers to be educated more so that they know where to spend their money. And, you know, because there are a lot of good brands that need that support, but maybe they're too small to afford that sexy marketing that you buy into. So maybe if you supported that small brand, they can actually afford a seat at the table. And, you know, and influencers, I'm talking to you, because there are a lot of influencers who will look at a small brand and be like, yeah, I'm going to charge you this much, and then turn around and give free promotion to these white-owned brands. And I don't understand that. And they are powerful in this community. So it all starts with the consumers and those who are showing the products. But I do want to talk about that press conference that we all saw. Great things happening in expungement here in LA and beyond. But this press conference was really important for LA. And you were a part of it. I would love for you to let us know what happened. Huge milestone.
Sure. Definitely very interesting for me, because to, like, sit there and know that, like, oh my gosh, I just did some work with the cops, even though it's the district attorney's office, but really, yeah, you know, hey, I just worked with the biggest cop.
Yeah.
And they were fair. They were genuine and honest, which was something that I didn't receive from the last office.
That's just refreshing. Yeah.
Very, 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 very refreshing to just, like, say, hey, I got a question for you. I know that we expunged 66,000 records last year that Jackie Lacey, or 67,000 that Jackie Lacey had submitted, but this is the city of Los Angeles. Like, how are you saying that there are only 67,000 people who have convictions that would fall under the Prop 64 legal relief? And she actually listened to me, and she's all like, well, can you cite your source? And I was like, yeah, no problem. Let me get you the articles that say and that quote different people from the public defender's office, and better yet, let me bring in the public defender's office. So, you know, that all led to what you're talking about now in terms of a press conference where the district attorney, or current district attorney, George Gascon, announced that they identified another 58,000 people and counting, like to remind people and counting, because obviously all of our systems are broken. And because nobody's taken advantage of technological advances, nobody's updated, we have information that still exists on microfiche. And if we talk to a 21, 22
year old... What is a microfiche? I'm in my 30s and I'm like, is that a small fish? What is this?
It's these old little cards that you'd be able to see in a machine that would blow up an entire record.
Wow.
So, exactly.
Not a floppy disk, though,
not
right?
A floppy disk.
See,
there's
floppy
nothing
disk.
On a computer.
Yeah.
This is an old machine that where you felt like you were looking at a microscope, but it was looking out and being able to afford you an opportunity to look at records. It's how we used to keep track of records.
So that you don't have a fat stack and you just have a little...
You have a little card that holds all of the records. Or not even a little card, but like... This little square plasticky thing that kind of looks like, what do you call that? When the doctors take a picture of your bone.
I see. One of the x-rays.
X-rays. So something yeah. comparable to that.
That's like, interesting. Didn't know about those.
Millennials. So,
yeah, well.
So I share all of that to just say that there's potentially a lot more people whose records are on these microfiches that nobody's ever looked at and seen.
They're dusted in some shelf. Yeah.
80s, 70s, 60s.
Wow.
But we worked really closely with the district attorney's office to identify these folks. The DA agreed that they deserve not only to have their record expunged and have their record sealed. So from my understanding, we helped create the largest expungement, or secondary, because this is a follow-up expungement, in the U.S.
Wow. And it's right here in L.A., and that's what's so big about it, is that L.A. is always constantly on the microscope in terms of cannabis. And so it's for these expungement efforts to really kind of start off here, it's going to really trickle down to, I think, around other U.S. and make sure.
Well, what it's also going to do is, you know, in other places like New Jersey and New York, who are saying, oh, we expunged 40,000 or 400,000. You're like, no, you didn't. Not yet.
It's now under a microscope in terms of like the validity of that statement, right?
Well, I mean, I think in the coming weeks, we'll probably see more information about how expungement got placed on the back burner. Because there are so many disconnects with, like I said, technology and different offices not talking to each other, that we'll probably be reevaluating as a community and as an industry what we've actually done to support these efforts,
right.
Primarily because in my humble opinion, and people figure out why, right now as a people, we deserve a big fat fucking F for not helping the community enough, especially the community who suffered these atrocities by being placed in institutions that didn't care about them, by becoming indentured servants and or slaves in institutions. And that the easiest thing for all of these systems to do were just to figure out a way to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
For the
communication,
the DA, the PD to talk to each other. We've got that here in LA, thankfully. But to now get the DA, the PD, to be able to talk to the judges. And then to also be able to get our state legislator and our Department of Justice to catch up on all of the things they haven't done because they haven't taken advantage of technological advances. So, I mean, great win for our city, those 58,000 people in the next 6 months. So it's not a perfect system to, like, even tell people that, like, oh, nobody really wave their magic wand or snap their fingers and it went away. It's still a process, but I'm on the job, which means that every other week the DA and I have a call to just make sure they're going to do what they said that they're going to do. And that we also identified another large bucket of people who qualify for expungement, not for cannabis, but for other drugs. And to tell people, like, hey, when we talk about the drug war, I'm not going to let you just make it about weed. Go fuck yourself. Because mm-hmm. that's not what happened in our communities. Like, mm-hmm. You haven't lived until you've lived in a community where they have a substation that they set up in your neighborhood. Or they came in with tanks. So unless that happened in your neighborhood, don't really talk to me about what's best for the community. Because you've obviously forgotten. Or you got to live in a better place than I got to grow up in. And I'm not hating on you for any of that. But, like, we've got to fix
it's reality,
that.
Yeah.
And acknowledge that, you know, the war on drugs was a war on black, brown, and poor people. And that marijuana was one of the things. So was cocaine. So were methamphetamines. So were everything at poppies. Everything else. And that... if you're going to figure out ways to legalize them and regulate them, that you owe communities that have been hurt by it reparations.
Reparations.
And the only, yeah. the biggest reparation we're asking for you is, hey, could you make it just go away so that the 48,000 barriers that exist for me as a human being to function from having housing, from being able to have a job, from being able to get licensed, to even being a PTA mom, that like it's our responsibility to make sure that that's erased yeah. so that all of these people can just have their lives.
God, to think how many awesome canna moms, you know, who rely on the plant, you know, so that they can function and be the best moms possible can't be on the PTA because of that. And that just is unfathomable because I happen to know so many canna moms who do it all. And do it all because they're running on the green. They're running on cannabis.
And imagine being one of those moms and you have a marijuana conviction and that excludes you from going on a field trip with your little person.
No. See, no, expunge that shit. Expunge it.
Just make it go away.
Make it go away and give back these people the dignity for them to do whatever they want. Don't give them anything other than just a chance for them to do it themselves. Because a lot of these folks, they want to do it themselves. They don't want handouts of anything else.
Well, I mean, most of them aren't even exercising their legal rights by even participating in expungement because they're all like, oh, well, I don't really trust this government.
Yeah.
I don't trust them to do it.
Yeah.
Why would I even want to go?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, when we had to say, oh, no, we'll bring in the community. We bring in Spanish translators. We try to make it as easy as possible.
And also the food pantry really helps. So I volunteered last year for the National Expungement Week. And what's great is that you guys partner with spaces that give other resources as well. So people were fully coming for the food and then being like, okay, because of this, I'll think about expungement and explore that. Some people were coming for expungement and taking advantage of the food pantry and all these other resources. So it's so great to see when organizations get smart like that and think, okay, we're supporting, you know, these people in different areas.
Well, I mean, when you talk about our communities in particular and what was stolen from our people, we have to recognize that most people need workforce development. Most people are going to need just basic needs met, food, housing, education. And then oftentimes people are also going to need other levels of healing. So like to say that, when we do things, we take that full-on approach where I'm like, okay, shit, I'm going to be getting ready to do something with LA County Office of Education. And they're the parents who have children who are in juvenile halls and how they navigate expungement. Well, you know, I started thinking, I was like, well, I'm old enough to be one of these kids' moms. You know, what would I need as a parent having to navigate and help my child, especially with various barriers that exist? You know, whether it's language barriers, whether it's financial barriers. So it's just been one of those things for me surrounding expungement is like, I really want to see somebody hit select all delete and make it go away so that I don't have to do this work anymore so that we can go do some more of the cool hippie stuff surrounding the healing and really empowering our people to remind them that like, you're not your conviction. Like if you've been told that this is where your station is, fuck that station. What else do you want to do? What are you dreaming of? Let's go focus on those dreams. So like for me, you know, it was great hearing the DA thank me. Like, I mean, I was sitting there and my publicist was like messaging me. She's like, oh my gosh. She's like, they're thanking you. They're thanking your organization. Like, I didn't even know if they were going to do all of those things. Like, you know, you never know when you work with government agencies. And it was just, it felt good to be acknowledged, to recognize that out of all of the justice organizations that are sitting at marijuana or sitting at cannabis, that a queer Latina-led organization, did more than all of the rest of the organizations. I'm looking at you. You know who you are. We've done more than a todo in just one swoop with just using our voice.
Yes, by making sure that you're loud, but intentional loud, right? Like, what are you fighting for? What are you making noise for? And you guys got with it and created this change. And yes, I'm going to thank you too. Thank you for what you
thank
did
you.
For the LA community. It's felt and it's going to be felt for, I think, decades to come. If this kind of
work.
Well,
just wait. I got other stuff going on.
Yes, let's talk about that. So in terms of recognition, we love to see Latinas recognized in this space. We love to see Black and Brown recognized. Tell us about this new film that's coming out.
Yes. So I'm in a documentary called Lady Buds. It features six women, primarily growers in Northern California. I'm the only one here from Los Angeles. I'm the only
repping.
I think I did our community proud. There's a specific scene that I ask a question. I'm not supposed to ask a question. They told me what the rules were, but I still asked the question anyway because inquiring minds wanted to know. But it's already been doing its documentary circuit. So it's been in Canada. I just got back from Mexico. We did two screenings in Mexico City. The Mexican movement was very grateful. So we used that as an opportunity to really help the Mexican movement there, to just get more people activated to recognize. But yeah, so the movie is going to be it today. Actually, it hit iTunes. So folks can buy it for, I can't remember how much, $12 or something like
that.
Nice. And it'll be available to stream the Friday after Thanksgiving. We're going to be in a few select theaters here in Southern California. I'm working on that right now and I'm working on some other things with some other groups who are all like, hey, well, we want to do a screening, but we want to be able to get high and have fun.
Yeah.
And we want to fundraise for your nonprofit organization, Felicia, because you do such amazing work. And so I'm all like, oh, yes, thank you. Also, like, that would be great. So
yes.
The movie features Sue Taylor. Sue Taylor, folks don't know Mama Sue. She has a dispensary in Berkeley, an incredible Black woman. Who's a senior, so like former Catholic school principal turns dispensary store owner. It features second generation farmer Chia Rodriguez and some other very, very cool, amazing women who I feel very honored to be able to share part of myself with a bigger audience.
It's so great to see women in cannabis get this kind of spotlight. You know, it's six women and it follows kind of your journey, right? And it's what you guys went through.
Well, it follows post-legalization. Mm. So it follows everybody navigating what legalization looks like. It follows farmers moving from the shadows into trying to get into the regulated market. It shows me just being my rabble-rouser self. And when I ran for an ADEM position, it doesn't even show like some of the cool stuff because it was like 4 years worth of footage.
Wow, 4 years worth. That's what I love about documentaries is that, you know, with films you can just go in and, you know, you have actors and this and that scripts. But with documentaries, you have to go in, you have to spend the time.
It's like 4 years of my life for 20 minutes on the screen.
Wow. So,
like, my wife was surprised. She was all like, oh, I made the cut. I wasn't sure if I was going to make the cut. Some of my friends in Mexico, they were all like, hey, we didn't make the cut. And I was all like, well, I told you. I'm all like, we did a lot of things during that time. So just in terms of, like, the message now, the message really is talking about stuff we're talking about right now, like in terms of big business coming in and taking away from people who traditionally done the work, people who have legacies, we're talking about generations of
right.
operating in these spaces, who are really just trying to do the best for the environment. They're the best soil, the best sun, the best aspects, and that oftentimes, you know, where we're at in this capitalistic world is that people don't value some of those things that we need to. So the film really highlights, at least for me, this intrinsic need for us to think, like you said, a little bit more about where we shop, who we support, what we do, and how we do it. And I'm just, I mean, the film is in a documentary next weekend in New York. I may or may not stay a little bit longer in New York when I'm there to do it. I'm kind of tired of seeing the documentary.
Oh, you don't want to see it again?
It's like, oh, I'm like, I saw it twice before it was released. Oops, sorry, rest of everybody. And then I saw it at Outfest, and I've seen it in Mexico. I'm kind of like...
Tapped out.
I'm like...
Well, you know, you can't count on this viewer right here. I'm excited to purchase it because, of course, I want to support the operation. And where can people follow? Does it have an Instagram account?
So it has an Instagram. It's Ladybuds. I think it's Ladybuds.
Well, you can just type in Ladybuds, and I'm sure the hashtag is up there. I have seen a lot of great press. People are loving it. People are loving women in cannabis. They're loving the discussions that this documentary is starting. And I'm really excited to watch it. I'm going to watch it as many times as you did. Every time, I'm going to be like, Felicia! Because I love it.
So, that was the best part for me, is like being at Outfest, which is the largest queer film festival in our globe, and being around community. So being around a bunch of queer people and then people of color who came and my friends. And like hearing them cheer for me.
Oh,
I was just like...
Me? You know, like me?
I was like, oh, they're cheering for me at this moment.
Wow, you deserve it. You deserve it. You really do. And I think that people like you, because I work in PR space, so I constantly see the press. And every time that I see people that maybe aren't really doing anything of meaning, and then I think of you. Because I'm like, where is the DA press conference? Where is everything else that you're doing for the community? You're inspiring women like me to join and stay in because I deal with bullshit. And I'm, every time I think there are other industries where I could be valued or I can be listened to or where I could be funded. But I have a mission in cannabis. And it's people like you that keep me in. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I really am grateful for that. I'm getting emotional now because I really...
Now I'm going to have to hit your bong.
Yes, let's hit the bong.
We both got emotional.
We both got emotional because it's hard out here for Latinas, and we find some that inspire us, that remind us why we're here. Ugh, cheers for that. So... I want to end this lovely chat with predictions.
Okay.
The Latino community is entering cannabis, flooding in, whether it's a trap brand, whether it's a legal brand, whether it's merch, whether it's cakes, you name it. They're coming in. They're entering. What do we see happening with Latinos in cannabis? Do we see a big change in corporate chains? Do we see that Latinos entering in that way? What are some predictions that you see?
My predictions aren't good.
It's okay. Because honestly,
I think there's enough of us who have bought into certain ideologies that we have to do these things to stay up to date with our white counterparts. So we continue to perpetuate white supremacy. We continue to create marketplaces that are extractive. What I'm hoping to see, what we need to see, is that we already recognize that our people don't have enough dough to actually participate on a one-on-one basis without having to kiss ass or beg some white person to give us money. What we need to do is figure out, like, dude, I got 2 G's. How many G's do you got? And buy into cooperative models that afford us to really be centered around what our collective goals are, recognizing that, like, dude, the table is big. I mean, I told you, I have 72 first cousins. Like, tell me at my Nana's house how many times I had to scooch over for another cousin or another family, a group, When I was like, I was like, my Theo and all of his kids would come and just scooch over. Like, that's the kind of plentiful table that we're afforded an opportunity to have with this plant. I mean, it's number one, it's a plant. Like, it's a It's a weed.
Right?
It is a weed that has survived millennia.
But look how beautiful. Look at this.
She's stunning, but she survived millennia. Like, to be able to tell people, like, she's survived all of the things that you're talking about that were supposed to destroy her. So she's going to be fine. And if we stop whoring her out and treating her without dignity and respect, like, we'll have this amazing opportunity to be able to actually create that type of change that we're talking about, because then we'd remove all of the stigmas associated and afford, especially our community members, an opportunity to heal.
Absolutely.
And not be afraid of her, because a lot of our people are afraid of her.
Yes. But I think that with Latinos entering, I think that our mission for those of us who are entering the cannabis space right now is disrupting kind of the way things are in corporate, and also
I hope so. Brands, you're
right? Disrupting.
I hope so. I mean, like to tell people, like, I'm a social entrepreneur. When I say that my wife makes me not have to worry, I have an opportunity to do other things. Like, I'm not just an activist and an advocate. Like, I've owned businesses. I own businesses. I'm partners in businesses, because how do you create this kind of impactful collective change? Like, I don't want to do the work, but maybe I've got some dough, or, oh, maybe we need to figure out ways to partner together, because I'm doing all of the real work. And that means I get into rooms and places and spaces that folks wouldn't have an opportunity.
Collaboration. I think collaboration in mind, like you said, we need those people who like the post, but we also need people who do the work, and like those two together, boom, you know what I'm saying? Like, more collaborative opportunities for sure. And I think that another byproduct of more Latinos entering the cannabis space are the conversations that are happening.
I hope so. I'm not in enough rooms like to tell people, like,
I'm thinking,
hey, I'm almost like, dude, if you come to my house and you see the garden sanctuary I've created in my front and my backyard, you would know I don't have to leave. Like,
I'm coming over.
I'm like, I don't have to leave. So for me, I haven't gotten that kind of exposure, because I'm just living in paradise.
Right. Oh, lucky.
While simultaneously also just micro focused on making sure that, like, hey, how many millions of people have been unjustly treated, have their lives completely altered? Like, to recognize, like, dude, I'm formerly incarcerated, but I have privilege. And guess what? I have a big ass mouth that I'm not afraid to use. I'm articulate enough for white people for them to be kind to me, right? There's a lot of us that
honestly,
are like
that's
that.
That's really impactful, honestly, because that resonated a lot with me, because I feel like because I'm educated, my proximity to whiteness became greater, and I feel that sometimes the reason why I'm in rooms is because of that proximity. I'm articulate. Yes, I have a master's degree, but like, I still have this whole side.
But now you can have fun with all of that, because that's the beauty of it. Like, to tell people, I just had a few conversations with the district attorney that opened up this door.
Yeah.
Because and these were with just people of color. These were my black siblings that I got to just, hey guys, we got to do this work, and just wait until we announce that, oh, we identified 170,000 and we're going to do this. And oh, great, we're also going to tackle this. So anytime we have opportunities to be in proximity with that,
we need to activate
on the soil. Like, I don't know how to say it other, like, you know, like on this tierra.
Yeah.
Like, we have no other choice than, like, to remind people, like, hey, yo, this is how it's really going to go down our soil.
I feel that, because when I do my strongest activism, the strongest activism I've ever done is writing and talking. That is the way that I have forced my way into these rooms, because I don't get invited a lot of times. I don't. But you know what they get? A strong-ass email that's well-written. And you can't say no to me. You can't say no when you read my bio, when you read what I've done, and you see where I went to school. And that's how I bust the doors wide open, because they don't listen to me. They don't listen to me when you look like this. They don't. They don't. They're like, we put you in a box. That's it. But you know what? They can't see me via email.
But that's the greatest part for not just you, but for everybody out there, that we have this unique opportunity on, like, how do we say, like, how do you say Atlan and just, like,
yeah.
remind people that, like, dude.
I want to put that on a bomb.
But it's true now that, like, hey, this is California.
Right.
I'm not talking about my friends in New York. When I come and kick it, respect, I'm coming on your soil. You tell me what's good.
Right.
But in California, in Utopia, like, there's enough for all of us.
Right.
A todo.
Right. Come on. Yeah. I think that Latinos entering, what we're going to see, you know, it's going to be noticeable in 5 years whether we've been able to break down these systems. I think, you know.
Well, we will, because we'll have what you talked about, that economic power.
Yeah.
And that's what folks aren't recognizing, is that our buying power is something that has been untapped. Cannabis market, every fucking market. And we're going to be in control.
Hell yeah. So I recently hosted a screening of a series called Mala Hierba out of Colombia, which is a series that talks about three Latino entrepreneurs from Colombia, newly legalized medical cannabis market. And the show is in all Spanish, but this is honestly one of the first shows that I'm seeing that's forcing open these conversations about cannabis as a business opportunity.
I'm so sad that I missed it, because I wanted the conversation.
Ooh, girl, but like the conversation, that's what I'm talking about. I think that entrepreneurship right now is going to create this thing. I screened the other day, or the event that I helped host and everything. The conversations that were being had just there are just massive in terms of like, oh, my generation wasn't with it, but I'm doing the work at home to make sure that that perception has changed.
Well, as long,
you know?
As, so I'd like to make this a hopeful prediction that our people recognize our economic power in cannabis and push this, define what corporate social responsibility, that accountability that you talk about, that you and I both really...
I want to get accountability tatted across my chest like Tupac, because I just am such a like advocate for it, but like, really, really, when you're about accountability, that's just period. Like,
just being responsible. Like, sometimes it's uncomfortable. Like,
it is uncomfortable.
For me to say, like, oh, I'm going to have to be participating in transformative healing sessions surrounding
right.
situations and scenarios that I'm a part of, that I'm going to feel uncomfortable. But we have to be accountable and push through it.
Yes, yes. So Latinos, the power is with us, honestly. Our buying
it's
power.
Ours.
The power is ours.
Guys, this is our tierra. My fellow Angelinos, my fellow Californians,
yes.
New Mexico, Texas, Arizona.
We're out here.
Colorado.
Chicago's got a little Latino, like.
Not even finished. Oregon.
Hey!
Let's just get everybody.
No,
so
for sure. But you
see.
Know, if we unite, if we make sure that we are our purchase power goes to us, and if we're supporting this trend that we're seeing upwards of Latinos entering the industry, is going to do the disrupting that I think we all need so that we all truly benefit.
There's enough tamales to be passed.
There is enough
everybody.
Tamales to go around, right?
Everybody.
Especially now when it's tamale season. Shout out to my tamale place in Compton called La Doña's. I'm about to head through there in a couple weeks to get my annual, like, 50 or 40 something tamales.
And I'm good.
Put them in the freezer.
I've got a date in San Fernando myself, so.
Yes, tamale season is here in LA. Thank you so much for dropping by. It was this amazing conversation. Thank you guys for watching the Greens podcast. Follow me on Susie Plasencia and Susie Greens. And where can people follow you?
I'd say follow the Social Impact Center to follow our work.
But you're on IG too. It's just
yeah, but I'm a little bit more. I'm a little bit more private.
Oh, okay,
but,
there we go.
Just F Carbajal. I mean, I'm boring. Like, I take pictures of my dog, my nephew.
Those
That's
are the
what
best
you watch.
Pics.
I was like, you get to see snippets of the best parts of my life.
That's what's up. Well, you live an amazing life. Thank you for all you do. And we'll see you guys next time. Let's end with a bong rip. I know I need one. Cheers. Ooh, that mota. Ooh, and we're out.